Good evening and welcome to Out of Bounds. I'm Tish Perlman. My guest is Ithaca's Chief of Police, Lauren Signer. Signer began her law enforcement career in Albany, New York in the late 1980s. She came to Ithaca after being appointed Deputy Chief of Police in 1999. And in August of 2004, after much vocal community involvement, was appointed Ithaca's first woman Chief of Police by Mayor Carolyn Peterson. Welcome to the show, Lauren.
Thank you.
Listen, I want to talk to you about being appointed chief a little later in the show, but first let's talk about the fact that I know more and more women are getting into law enforcement, but it's still a male bastion.
Absolutely.
Particularly. And so what was it that made you want to get into this career?
I was at SUNY Albany, a certified English teacher, English and French, and I couldn't find a job after I graduated. And I was working in a supermarket as a cashier, and on my last night there, my last customer was a handsome young man who was a teacher at the local high school, and he invited me to come and do like a substitute teaching, come watch him teach. So I copied his phone number off his check, and I called him. And I said, I really would like to come and see you teach. He was a science teacher. So I did go and watched him in the classroom, and it was interesting because they have equipment, and the students, you know, they had to be careful how you move the students around the room, as opposed to an English class, which, you know, pencils are the most dangerous thing in the room.
Exactly.
So I learned a lot, and as I was leaving, he asked me if I'd like to go out on a date, which was okay. So we did start dating, but it turns out that he always wanted to be a police officer, and he was taking the test for the Albany Police Department, and he encouraged me to take the test, at which I promptly laughed. The thought of myself in a police car was ridiculous, but hey, you know, I didn't have a job. So what the heck, it was $5, I took the test, and that started a long career.
Really?
It's 19 years later,
serendipity
is an amazing thing.
That is. So you just have to take a test, and then you have to get some training, I assume, right?
You take the test, it's a civil service position like all the others. You score, depends on how you score in the test. They canvass the list, then you have to go for physical, you have to go for psychological, you have to go for a PT test, they do a background, blah, blah, blah. It takes about a year through the whole process. So believe me, by the end of that year, you're very sure you want to do this.
Yeah.
Because you've made a lot of decisions along the line saying, yes, this is what I want.
Mm-hmm.
So if they offer you the position, you're ready. And you're like, I've earned it.
Yeah.
I want this job. And my thought was, if I don't like it, I can always leave.
Well, yeah, that's the way almost any profession would.
Right. I had my teaching credentials. I was still certified. I wasn't losing anything by taking this position. So, and I was young. You know, I was 23, and I was in good shape and, you know, happy, looking at life, saying, hey, this could be cool. And
so,
he was.
So you did. You started out your career in Albany. And so what were those first few months like? Were you a patrol officer? Is that how that
Yes, everybody starts in patrol, and they should. There's a good reason for that. And you need to learn. You need to start where everybody else is. And it's intoxicating. Literally, the adrenaline rush is incredible.
Really?
The first 2 years, I would go into work and think, man, they're paying me for this. I can't believe they're paying me to drive this big police car around and do all this cool stuff. It's just such a high. Then it starts to wear on you. And when you start seeing the same people with the same problems, or you start hitting the walls in the organization where you try to get ahead, but people are not interested because you don't fit the mold, that kind of thing.
Mm-hmm.
So after a couple of years, the shine starts to wear off. But then, you know, you're making a good salary. You're comfortable in the sense you know what you're doing. You're certainly more comfortable than when you got there.
Mm-hmm.
So that it starts to get interesting then.
Yeah. And then did you find yourself having to prove yourself as a rookie and also as a woman? Was it a double-edged sword?
Was it absolutely is. All rookies had to prove themselves. But believe me, if you were not a white male, you had to do 10 times the work under much more scrutiny. And there was always a lot of people sit around and say, well, you should have done this and you should have done that. And, well, everybody knows. Well, you know, I didn't hunt my whole life. Everybody doesn't know. If you didn't teach me in the academy, you should have.
Yeah, exactly. Yeah, so you did have to prove yourself as a woman. Also, with the constituency that you had to deal with on the streets, was there a difference, too? Did you have to feel like you had to be tougher when you were younger and just starting out?
In fact, it was a great advantage to be young, freckly-faced, and seen as not threatening. I was not threatening. I'm not, 6 foot two, overbearing, challenging a man usually to a fight, because what do you get from hitting me? Big deal. You hit a girl. Oh, good for you.
Yeah, exactly.
I mean, there's no macho factor, and most of the time, you could talk people into what you wanted them to do, because they weren't, you hadn't triggered all those defenses in them. So a disadvantage, I wouldn't say it's a disadvantage, I'd say it's a different approach.
Mm-hmm.
And
mm-hmm.
certainly, I was bitten, kicked, thrown up on, thrown through doors, all the bad things that do happen.
Uh-huh.
I bounce.
Yeah, you have to. And, it's well known that women are really good communicators, and I think that is a great deal of what one needs to be in order to be an effective
Absolutely.
Authority figure.
The thing you use the most is your mouth.
Uh-huh.
They teach you how to use the gun. They teach you how to drive the car. But you know what you use the most? Your mouth.
Mm-hmm.
And you can talk people into a car or talk them out of hurting themselves or someone else, or you can force them. And a lot of it depends on what you're comfortable with, what the situation. But we're trained to deal with the force side and the threat side for the whole police academy. But we're really not trained to deal with convincing people.
Mm-hmm.
And
the psychology.
That is correct. That is correct.
Human
so
behavior.
That is the advantage, certainly, for females in law enforcement.
Mm-hmm, mm-hmm. I also want to talk about the fact that in 1988, while you were working in Albany as a law enforcement officer, you started the DARE program.
Yeah.
Right?
Yeah. Oh,
and,
yeah.
And for people who don't know, that's Drug Abuse Resistance Education
sure.
Program. Well known, been around for 30 years now. To tell us about that. And
DARE was a wonderful, and still is, and we have it here in Ithaca still, a wonderful program. I tend to discuss DARE as community policing for children in the schools. People love community policing. We want community policing. This is an aspect, a very important aspect of community policing, because it gives the officers a chance to form meaningful relationships with the kids. Well, of course, passing on very, very important information. But the kids love the uniform. They love to ask you questions, and they're happy to see you, and they pay attention. You have, a captive audience, a teacher's dream.
Yeah.
So you combine the flash with the information that they're soaking up because they're just, dazzled, and they ask you questions, and you can turn all that around into, reinforcing your lessons. Really, really wonderful. So I enjoyed that. I did that for 5 years.
Mm-hmm, mm-hmm. And what do you think about the fact that DARE has been around for 30 years? Are we winning the drug war? A lot of people dispute that. And should we look
I'd
at different
say,
approaches,
well,
perhaps?
It's, there's so many different ways to measure. And
mm-hmm.
certainly one thing I've learned after 19 years in law enforcement is there are no easy answers. Things are very complicated.
Yeah.
As far as the impact DARE has directly on the drug war, I've seen a lot of the literature and a lot of the studies, but I've been in the classroom. And I've also seen the 6'2", 15-year-old come up and say, "Yo, Officer Lauren." And me looking at the kid thinking, oh, geez. And he's saying, "You was my DARE instructor." That's right. I remember, because, of course, they were 4'2" when I saw them, and they've grown. But they're seeing me the same way. And that communication is still there. That bridge is still there, that link. And that's extremely valuable.
So maybe that's the trick. You do need to do this kind of a service. Get in there when the kids are young.
Absolutely.
Before they've started.
Of course, I was an educator before I was a police officer.
Yeah,
so.
And that has to be helpful.
Absolutely, absolutely. And teachers love it. They love having the officer come into the classroom. They love weaving all the material together. They like to have the kids excited. It's another tool for them to use. And it's just a wonderful program.
Mm-hmm, mm-hmm. And have you talked any kids into becoming police officers?
I talk about being a police officer all the time. In fact, I've at my office, I do talk to young women in particular. I'm very interested in spending time with young women and answering questions. I don't try to convince anyone to become a police officer. What I do is say, if you want to, if you walk in here and say, "I want to be a police officer, how do I do it?" I'll do everything I can to help you. But if you say, "Should I think about this?" Well, you should think about it, and this is what you should think about, because there are a lot easier ways to earn a living, mm-hmm. and there's a lot easier way to get through life and not read about yourself in the newspaper every day and see ugly pictures of yourself in the newspaper and have so much criticism and negativity. Don't need that.
Yeah. Exactly. You know, a lot of people think of the romantic version of law enforcement.
No. Yeah. Romantic, I wouldn't say romantic. What I would say is the best thing about law enforcement is you really do get to make a difference. Mm-hmm. You really do. It may not be the way you think it is when you first come in, but you really have an impact on your community, and that is very fulfilling mm-hmm. to me.
And probably every day.
Every day.
Every day.
Every day. You don't know when you come in, you don't know what you're going to do. You don't know who you're going to help. You don't know what difference you're going to make because you went to work that day. Mm-hmm. And that's very exciting and very fulfilling.
Yeah, I'll bet it is. Now you left Albany in 1999, I believe, to come here?
That is correct.
To become the deputy chief of police.
That is correct.
What was that transition like? Because Albany is such a bigger
Albany
city.
Albany is a bigger city. The department has 350 sworn officers, 150 civilian personnel. Mm. Here in the city of Ithaca, we have 75 sworn and about 25 civilian. It was a lot of things were similar in the sense that Albany's broken up into divisions. So mm-hmm. when you worked in a division, you had about the same size as the entire the entire department in Ithaca. I thought it was going to be very different. Really, the only difference is there's not the volume of crime that there is in Albany, but there is the range. Hmm. So while in Albany you may have 7 murders a year, in Ithaca you may have 1 or 2, but the officers still have to be able, they have to have the skills to process and deal with everything. So in a sense, the officers in a smaller department are much more talented because they have to be able to do a lot more things. In Albany, you had specialized units. So you'd get to the crime scene, you're the, you know, uniform officer, you'd hold the perimeter. Then the ID guys would come, and they would do all the processing. And then the investigators would come in, and they'd document the crime scene. And then you were really removed, whereas here, you do it all.
Hmm. And also, I would think it's more of an intimate relationship with the community when you're in a smaller town. Does that make for different dynamics?
Well, for this community, yes.
Well, let's just focus on this community. It's the only one we both know to speak of. But one does become more intimate with the population.
Absolutely. Uh-huh. Yeah, this is a small town, and there's nothing that goes on that we don't know, we don't hear about at the dry cleaner or at the restaurant. It's just amazing.
Does that get in the way sometimes? You start forming prejudices based on small town gossip?
It gets in the way in the sense that I'm very careful when I'm out and when I'm talking to people because I know people are listening. People know who I am, mm-hmm. but I don't necessarily know who they are. So I've learned to be really, really careful. If I'm going out to lunch with the deputy chiefs, we pick a place that's pretty empty, and we watch what we say when the waitress comes over. And I spend a lot of time at home with my family, so I don't have much of a social life. So that helps in the sense that I don't come into that encounter very often where I have to mm-hmm. kind of deal with being who I am and what I do mm-hmm. When I'm with my family. But I have had people say very nasty things to me when I've been with my children. And what I do is I say to my son, my 10-year-old, go wait over there. Mommy can see you. I need you to wait over there. And then I tell the person, look, you have something to say to me, you make an appointment. That's fine. Don't you ever speak that way to me in front of my children. Yeah. They do not understand. That is not fair. You know, I am a public official, but they're not. Yeah. So it's too frightening for them. They don't know why people don't like their mommy, or they have, why is that lady mean to you? It's just my job, honey. Yeah.
So people come to you with beefs about process and how they were treated and stuff?
Oh, constantly. Oh, yes. Yes. So, and that's okay in the sense that I am a public figure and it's my job and I want to be available in the sense that I want to hear, I want to investigate, but I don't. Your delivery is going to have a lot of impact on my next step. But I work all the time. I'm in the office all the time. I ride around in my yellow car all the time.
Yeah.
Just, if you have to talk to me, which is fine, just don't be nasty in front of the kids. That's all.
I think a lot of people in public life have to deal with that.
Oh, yeah.
I've heard lots of actresses and actors have to tell people, please, you know, I'm out here with my children.
Right, I'm with my kids.
Falling all over me.
Yeah.
If you're just joining us, my guest is Lauren Signer. She's Ithaca's chief of police. Now, let's talk a little bit about when you were appointed chief of police here in Ithaca. There was a lot of contention, a lot of controversy.
There sure was.
Was this a difficult transition? Were you shocked by some of this?
I was, yes and no. I was well aware of the controversy. Certainly, it's steeped in the police department at the time.
Mm-hmm, mm-hmm.
The fact that people would be so vocal and nasty in a public forum disappointed me.
Mm-hmm.
That surprised me. But I wasn't surprised by the tactics and the things that were done, because there's a lot at stake. This is a big deal.
Oh, it is.
And the mayor, you know, she was a new mayor. She had a tough decision. She didn't see this coming up. It was hard. It was a tricky time, but it did get nasty.
Mm-hmm.
And I guess what bothered me the most about that is most of the people that wrote nasty things or said nasty things had never met me.
Mm-hmm.
But they were going on. They were fueled by other people, and they felt totally comfortable writing ignorance and gossip and sending it in with their name on it.
Yeah, there was a lot of letters that seemed totally off the wall.
Yeah, yeah. So that was kind of disappointing.
And then what do you think most of that outcry was about? Do you think it was based on sexism, or was it just because one side wanted the other candidate to win?
Well, like all small towns, mm-hmm. what I think it was is, hey, here's the hometown guy who has worked his way up through the department, which is true, talented, capable.
Talking about John Bosall.
That is correct. Mm-hmm. And he should get it. He deserves it. He's been here. And I wasn't saying that he shouldn't get it. What I was saying is, yes, he's contributed a lot, but look what I have to offer. I didn't need to put him down, and I wouldn't do that to sell myself, but other people felt that they needed to bring me down or try to bring me down to lift him up. And that didn't do him any good either, you know. That was a disservice to him, even if they were thinking they were going to help him.
Yeah, and that seems to be the way the discourse has gone in this country, too. In order to put your point across, you have to put somebody else down.
Right. And
instead of tackle the issue at hand.
Yeah, let's be grown-ups, okay?
Yeah,
you know?
Yeah. So you serve at the pleasure of the mayor.
Actually, I do not.
You don't?
I am a civil servant. So
I see. Okay.
When we talk about the pleasure of the mayor, let's say the mayor comes in and she's unpleasant.
That never happens with Carolyn Peterson.
It doesn't, actually. She's terrific.
Yes,
but
she is.
Let's say she comes in and she decides, you know, Lauren, I'm just sick of you. She has to still follow civil service law to forcibly remove me from the position.
I see.
But she could call me in and say, Lauren, this is not working out. You might want to look for another job.
So she could do that.
She could do that, sure. I mean, if she and I didn't get along, if there wasn't cooperation, my job would be a lot harder. Mm-hmm. So she could certainly make my working environment difficult. Mm-hmm. Thank goodness she has not
chosen to do that. And do you have to report to her every day, or is there a schedule in which
I report to her based on what's going on. We have more of a heads-up kind of, you know, just so you know, we're going to Ithaca Gun because it seems to be on fire, thought you might want to know, type of relationship. And we do meet regularly every week with the other department heads, and then we meet every other week. And then if there's anything, any kind of emergency or whatever, I can get her. I can get her out of a meeting or whatever. So she knows if I call and I say to her assistant, Annie, I need to talk to the mayor, it's important.
Uh-huh.
You know, so we have enough of an understanding between us, and we can triage what's going on. And it's either important to me and my organization, or it's important to her politically, or it's important to the community, or, you know, that's more how we work together. Mm-hmm. But we have a very informal, ongoing kind of relationship.
Uh-huh, uh-huh. And I think a lot of people in the public didn't know that has to be one of the considerations when a mayor appoints a police chief.
Absolutely.
You have to be able to work together.
It is critical.
And I think a lot of people just thought, oh, they like each other. So, no, it has to
I
do
didn't
with
even
a professional
know her.
Relationship.
Oh, no, I didn't even
that's
know her.
Necessary in a town.
You know what it is? You need the for the mayor, it is so vital to have a police chief you can trust and you can communicate with, because there's nothing that's going to bring a politician down faster than a police scandal. Mm. Nothing. And so that's your lifeblood right there. You want somebody that can keep the troops in line, that's competent, can speak well, doesn't get up and blubber like an idiot and say stupid things, okay? Because they're representing you and your administration. So it's so very important that it's someone you can communicate with. Not necessarily agree with all the time.
Absolutely.
Because she and I are really different. Mm-hmm. But we agree to disagree, or we agree to get along, whatever it is, but it's a professional relationship. And it's business, Tish. Mm-hmm. It's business.
Mm-hmm. Yeah, yeah, I actually do understand that, very, very much so. Now, I wanted to ask you just on a personal level, do you become cynical as somebody in law enforcement for so many years, since oftentimes you are the first responder to people's worst behaviors?
Do you become cynical? I'd say that...
About human nature in some ways.
I'd say that's a danger. I have countered that personally because of my spiritual beliefs. Mm. And what I realize the longer I'm here and the longer I deal with people is life is complicated and there aren't easy answers. And who am I to judge? You see, Tish, I'm not the judge. I am the responder. I'm the person to help. And the judge is somebody else sitting in another seat with different training. I function as part of the system. And, yes, I see a lot of things.
And you do have to make judgments.
Oh, absolutely. However. You have to make judgments, but we're trained.
Mm-hmm.
As an administrator, that's where it gets a little hairy.
Really?
Because, you know, when in police school, they don't train you for this. They don't really give you, like, administration lessons. So a lot of that is live and learn, you know, make mistakes and learn.
What kind of problems do you come with? You mean having to fire people and hire people and discipline people?
Certainly that is a big part of what we do. Personnel management takes a big part. And the political side of it.
Uh-huh.
How to deal with politicians has been a whole new chapter in my career. and what they can know and what they can't know and why. Where to draw the line on what's our information, what's for public information, what isn't. And how to approach people and just how to deal with them. In as a chief, I have to have a different approach than I do as a lieutenant or a sergeant, and certainly as a police officer. So sometimes I have to be diplomatic when I don't feel like it. And other times I can be, I get away a lot with being not coarse, but short and direct, because that's the field I work in. It's emergency services. I don't ask people, oh, would you like to go direct traffic at the corner because the building's on fire? I say, you, corner, direct traffic. That's what I do, because I don't have time to be nice. I don't have time to ask. I'm not asking. I'm directing. I'm taking control, and I'm moving and getting things done. And I'm not apologizing for that.
Yeah.
But a lot of people are put off by that.
Well, especially from a woman.
Oh, yeah.
You know, I mean, that's what leadership's about. And you know, women can be called all kinds of names when they assert that leadership.
Absolutely.
Which makes no sense to me anymore.
Because, this is it.
Because a lot of voters are voting women into these positions, and you can't be a wimp and you can't be a leader.
No.
So women are walking a fine line.
Get
still.
The job done. It's not personal. That's what I say. My big thing is it's business. It's not personal. This is what we're here to do. If you don't like it, you can move on because you did choose to join. You were not drafted. But this is, we have a paramilitary organization, and it doesn't matter who's giving the orders. What matters is the rank of the person giving the orders. And in a lot of ways, having those three stars on my shoulder has cleared away a lot of confusion and debate.
Mm-hmm.
Because in the end, I'm the one that promotes, hires, fires, and I'm the one that's making the decisions. Mm-hmm. And they realize that.
And people have to respect the office.
Yes, they do. They do. And part of what we do from that office is say, hey, we want input. We want collaboration to the degree that we can in this kind of institution. And these are the rules.
Mm-hmm.
And you have to treat each other respectfully. You have to treat us respectfully. And if you can't play by the rules, then don't play.
Mm-hmm. Mm-hmm. I want to move on to another subject. And in addition, obviously, to petty crime and serious crime and traffic violations and stuff that police departments deal with, every police department in this country has to deal with racism.
Absolutely.
How are we doing here in this part of the world?
How are we doing in this part of the world? Well, I'd say that this is a constant, racism is a constant topic, whether it comes up as a result of people that are arrested or people that are victims or how service is provided actually is really for us the day in, day out issue of racism is how do we provide the service that all our citizens are paying for in an equal manner and with an equal eye. And it's a constant question and it's a constant tweaking of our response. One of the big things we focus on in the city is promoting diversity and getting the best candidates we can that bring the most to our organization, and that means diverse candidates.
Exactly.
Huh? Yeah. So we spend a lot of time with the issue of race, racism, sexual preference, that kind of thing, when we're looking at how do we encourage people to think about law enforcement as a career, because the community we serve looks like this, and we look like a bunch of white guys with blue suits on.
And traditionally, African American and minority communities have often been treated badly by police departments. I'm originally from Los Angeles.
I would say they've been underserved and they've been underrepresented and they haven't had a voice in how police departments are staffed or controlled there hasn't been a two-way dialogue. So policing is very traditional. Used to be, not here anymore, but very traditional, and they followed old styles, and they were old thinkers. Mm-hmm. So, yes, there were a lot of bad results of that.
And I assume as a woman chief, you're making changes.
I'm making a lot of changes. I hope they're good changes.
Yeah. Well, dialogue in itself.
I will talk to anybody, Tish. Uh-huh. I will talk, you know, because, hey, that's my job, and I may not agree with you. But if you give me the opportunity to listen and hear, I may have an explanation for you why our organization approaches a problem a certain way, what our training is, what we're thinking, and that's building bridges.
Exactly.
So I want to do the same. I want to understand where you're coming from, but I want you to give me the chance to explain.
We're almost out of time, but I do want to ask you this last question. Most people get their take on law enforcement from television and novels and movies. Tell me what the biggest misconceptions are that people get from this.
The biggest misconception is that we're always busy with exciting things and driving around full speed. There's a lot of downtime, and there's a lot of boring. Even if we're driving fast to the same apartment that we've been to three times this week for a domestic, it's frustrating. It's slow. There's a ton of paperwork. It's got to be done right. This is not glamorous. This is not what you see on television.
Yeah.
Because who wants to watch that?
Yeah. And the good guys and bad guys, it's not a black and white livelihood either, I wouldn't think.
it's much more interesting and much more complicated than portrayed on television. But it's a much slower pace for the most time than what's portrayed on television. But when it's bad, it's really bad.
Lauren Signer, thank you so much for being with us.
Thank you for inviting me.
Our audio producer is Nate Richardson at Rep Studio in Ithaca, New York. We are a project of the Women's Interfaith Institute in Seneca Falls. Our theme music was composed by Diego Vega. And log on to our new website at outofboundsradioshow.com. We'll be back next week. I'm Tish Perlman.